Bruce Lipton is a biologist, an author, and a speaker, and he's one of the individuals who really changed my worldview about how the mind and our consciousness affect the body. He's continued this work throughout the decades, from that first book that I read called The Biology of Belief to everything that he's integrating now, from quantum physics to spirituality. We have an incredible conversation about some of the meta themes, these problems we're facing in today's culture, and a way forward to pointing the solution, how we're going to restore our own health physically and our own health communally and worldwide. So enjoy this podcast with Dr. Bruce Lipton.
And now a word from our sponsors.
First up, we have Mudwater. So if you guys have been listening to the show for a while, you know that I've been talking about Mudwater for years because I've been using Mudwater for years. So what is it? It's a coffee alternative packed with the best cacao and also the functional mushrooms, all 100% organic ingredients in a blend that's a coffee alternative because I don't like to start my day with coffee. That's something I add in the afternoon. But not only do they have their Rise Cacao blend that I have in the morning that has a little bit of caffeine, they also have other blends. They have their turmeric blend, they have their evening blend, all of which are perfect for different times of the day and also get different functions, different flavors. What I do is I'll blend them with a little bit of nut butter, some coconut butter, maybe some actual butter or ghee, and a little bit of protein sometimes. And this is just one of my favorite drinks, either morning, afternoon, or evening. Mudwater is the shit, and these guys are our people. They've been donating to psychedelic research since day one. I know the founder well. He's a great dude. This is a great company with great products that are good for you. And so please, if you're interested in Mudwater, check it out, mudwtr.com/amp, and you will get samples of all their different formulas and the frother. And the frother is super rad because it allows you to actually not have to use a blender. You can just blend it right up with whatever, almond milk, and use the little mini blender frother thing, and you'll have your own latte just ready to go whenever you want. So this is a great offer from Mudwater. And again, if you're interested in supporting the show and trying Mudwater, please go to mudwtr.com/amp. Next up, we have Soltara Healing Center. So if you've heard me talk about my ayahuasca experiences over the last 3 years, or perhaps saw the documentary Dragon of the Jungle, you've heard me talk about Soltara Healing Center. This is the place that I've gone, and this is the place that I'll continue to go for the foreseeable future because of a few reasons. One, I trust the integrity of the leadership. I trust the integrity, quality, and impeccability of the facilitation, and also the selection of the shamans that they use to serve the medicine. In addition, their medicine that they use, the ayahuasca that they use, is a beautiful medicine. So many things come together to create a great healing center, and Soltara is a great healing center. And I've gone to their center in Costa Rica, and it's a beautiful place and is often booked out. So they've opened up some additional centers. They've opened up a center in Tarapoto, and more interestingly for me, they've opened a center in the Sacred Valley in Peru as well. Now, the Sacred Valley is absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. This facility is called Raices Incas, and I'm really excited to check it out. I'll be there in May for my own private retreat. And I just really stand by Soltara being a super high quality operation from top to bottom. Now, as I'm talking about this, this is not me recommending that you go do ayahuasca. I want to make that very clear. The call to do ayahuasca is a very personal calling. It's a very personal choice to follow that medicine path. And I'm the last person to say that this is something that you should do. But if this is something that calls to you, I can stand by the fact that Soltara does it as well as any place that I've ever been to and really epitomizes excellence all the way top to bottom, from the food that they serve to the preparation to the integration to the facilitation. So I stand by Soltara as a company, as a facility, as a retreat center, and it's up to you whether this path calls to you. But if it does, I think Soltara is a great choice, and it's really the only choice that I recommend to people who are interested in following the ayahuasca path. So once again, This is completely up to you, your own vocation, your own calling, your own choice. But if you do want to make the choice, I can say without hesitation that Soltara is an incredible facility and company to work with. So if you're interested in checking it out and checking out their new facility, the Raíces Inca in the Sacred Valley, go to soltara.co. That's SOLTARA.co. And I look forward to hearing how it goes for you.
So I'm thrilled to share with you guys, I co-founded a new company called Sayu, which makes essential oils. And the reason I wanted to do this is that I've found that the power of essential oils when used in ceremony or in ordinary life is really profound. It's an opportunity to invite you into a different world. So when I'm facilitating medicine or receiving medicine, I reach for these essential oils to allow their scent to transport me into a different world. Now, there are many different botanicals and essential oils that exist in the market, but I wanted to create the very best, the things that I would want to use when I'm in ceremony, the worlds that I would want to enter into. And so we got with the best formulators, the best ingredient suppliers, where everything is sourced in a beautiful way, all the way from the seed to the distillation to the partners where we're acquiring these botanicals, so many of them wild harvested, so many of them that really abide by the principles of a more beautiful world and a more beautiful relationship with the world. And the name Sayu is also really rad. I asked Matthias DiStefano, what is the word in Atlantean for earth? And he scribbles on his notepad in Atlantean, so he really knows this language. And if you believe that or not, it's up to you. But he said the name was Sayu, S-A-Y-U. And so we called the company Sayu, S-A-Y-U, because it's a relationship with the beautiful array of flora that exists on our planet. So we created six different blends that invite you into six different worlds. The first world, of course, is Arcadia, the name of our festival. It's a scent that brings you this feeling of joy and connection in this unique blend called Arcadia. And then there's Valhalla, the smell of steel and leather, a more masculine scent, and the smell of the earth and wood. And then there's Eros, which is this delicious smell of both vanilla and spice that invites you into a more erotic state. And then there's Elysium, just like the heavenly fields that bring a sense of peace and calm. And then there's Mage, which was actually channeled by one of our partners as a way to use these unique plants that I've never smelled before as a form of spiritual protection and transportation into different worlds. And lastly, there's Helios, which uses the flower Corsican Helichrysum, which is one of the most coveted and beautiful scents in the world. And when I first smelled it, I was like, oh man, this is the smell of sunlight. If sunlight had a smell, this is it. So we called it Helios and blended it with some other botanicals. So everything from the beautiful packaging to the way that these oils are harvested and distilled from these plants, we just did it right every way, all the way up, all the way down. And these are all in my medicine bag wherever I go. And I think you guys are going to love them. So I'm super proud to share our new company, Sayu.earth, Sayu.earth. And if you're interested, you can get 15% off with the code Aubrey and invite yourself into these wild, beautiful worlds that I've co-created with my partner, Carly. So Sayu.earth, and definitely let me know what you think, because I absolutely fucking love these essential oils.
And now an uninterrupted podcast with Dr. Bruce Lipton. Bruce, this is an absolute pleasure.
Hey, I'm excited. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to start all the way back at the beginning, because we're going to get to the point where I was actually introduced to your work, the book, The Biology of Belief. I read that along with Joe Dispenza's You Are the Placebo. It really changed my worldview about how thoughts impact our biology. But I want to go back even deeper, because this is located in a cosmological structure and a story, which is not the same story we've been told, which is materialist, reductionist, Newtonian physics, all of this stuff that we grew up learning, really now we're starting to get a new look on what the beginnings and origins of both the cosmos and life actually look like. So I wanted to invite you to take us back to the beginning and where it all began.
Well, as a scientist, let's start where science came into the picture, and that was the scientific revolution in the 1500s. But the main spokesperson for that scientific revolution was Isaac Newton. And I goes, yeah, so what was the benefit? Well, he was a great guy. I mean, he was brilliant at what he was doing. But he ended up giving us a picture of a universe that's divided into two separate realms, the invisible energy realm and the physical material realm. The problem with that was that he said matter affects matter, energy affects energy, but they don't interact with each other. Well, that separated the whole concept of spirituality out of the picture, because spirituality was supposed to be that invisible stuff anyway. And now it turns out that we have so lost it that we're in such a material world, such, you know, ignoring the energy, the vibration, which is the foundation of quantum physics. And I go, well, wait, what was the transition from Newtonian? And it goes, well, in Newtonian physics, we took the atom apart and found that little solar system with a nucleus, protons and neutrons, electrons running around. It's like, oh, just smaller pieces. Quantum physics came into the picture when they said, well, what are those small pieces made out of? And all of a sudden, they started to realize it's not made out of matter. Everything is made out of energy. And all of a sudden, it says, well, wait, then the whole idea you separated the universe into two realms is 100% false. I go, yeah, everything is energy. And I go, well, there's a couple of interesting parts about that. I say, energy doesn't have any edges. I said, what does that mean? I said, well, here's where the energy stopped. I said, no, energy is just waves that go through space. So the significance, if you can picture in your mind rain falling on a pond and all the ripples that are coming out, the ripples are what the energy looks like. They're waves like that. Significance, if you look at it, is there's no set of ripples that stands alone. All the ripples on the entire pond are integrated with each other. And it basically says the whole universe is one seamless understanding of energy, and that everything is energy, including us. And they took apart, of course, the atom and saw that it was made out of energy. And then number one principle, now I want to acknowledge this, Aubrey, because this is critical. The most valid of all the sciences on this planet today is quantum physics. There's no science that is more true in its understanding than any other science out there. Mm-hmm. I go, so the most valid science on the planet today acknowledges, and this is connecting to us in a really important point, is that principle number one in quantum physics is consciousness is creating our life experience. That all of a sudden this is a consciousness and universe, and that our consciousness is shaping the character of our lives. Well, that was pretty esoteric to me. That was like, well, that's a cool idea, you know, and I had no connection to it until I started cloning stem cells. Just for the audience's sake, a human body is not a single entity. A human body is comprised of about 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. You and I, Aubrey, are actually, by definition, communities of 50 trillion cells. And so our body has these 50 trillion cells. And every second, we're losing a million cells. Just died. You know, we just talked 60 seconds, 60 million cells just disappeared. And I go, that's a big number of cells. I go, yeah, it is. And I go, well, how long can you live if you're losing that many cells all the time? And I go, well, if you didn't have stem cells, which are the correct name is embryonic cell. We changed the name when you were born. The moment before you're born, oh, that's an embryonic cell. The moment after you're born, the same, oh, that's a stem cell. Okay. So the point is, if you're watching this program, you have stem cells, otherwise you would have been dead by now. So the question, do I have stem cells? The answer, of course you do. We all do, that we're alive right here. So I said, so what was the significance of that? Well, this is the part that took me as a scientist from believing in molecules and DNA and protein and genes, and we're here, and then we're back into the building blocks and all that. There was an important insight as a scientist that I started to recognize, and that was that no two people are the same biologically. I go, what does that mean? I say, we cannot exchange cells with each other. We cannot, except for red blood cells. The other cells in your body have markers on them. They're antennas. They're called receptors. They're actually a group of them. They're called self-receptors. And I go, what are they? And they're on the surface of the cell. They're like protein antennas. No two people have the same set. I'm going, so that's why I can't put my cells into your body, because my antennas don't match your antennas, and your immune system will say not self and then destroy it. So there's a self. I say, what is it? Those antennas on the surface. I go, yeah, but what about it? I go, they're receivers. They're antennas. They receive a broadcast. I go, what do you mean? I go, our identity is not built into the cells. Our cells have antennas that receive our identity. Our identity is an energy field. And the definition of field is invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. And the definition of spirit is invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. The reality is, science has now recognized the nature of spirituality. Mm-hmm. And the most prestigious journal on the planet, most prestigious scientific journal, is called Nature. And there was an article in there by a quantum physicist from Johns Hopkins, Richard Conhenry. And the article is called The Mental Universe. But I tell people, I show them the actual last sentence in the article. And it says, the universe is immaterial. Well, that means it's not made out of matter. Yeah, because now we know it's all made out of energy. The universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. And I go, holy Jesus.
a big revolution in thought.
Has published that, yes, it's all mental and spiritual. I go, yes. And my work showed how the mental pictures in your mind are translated by the brain into complementary chemistry. So there's chemistry for love, there's chemistry for fear, there's chemistry for anger. And so whatever picture you hold in your mind, the brain releases complementary chemistry that matches that picture, and it releases it into the body, and the chemistry of the blood is what controls the genes and the behavior. And all of a sudden it says, oh my God, it's just what the physicist said. Our consciousness is translated into chemistry, which in turn is sent to the body and controls our genetics and our behavior. And it's like, oh my God. My life went like, well, wait a minute. And the first thing was the most fabulous experience. I call it having a heart orgasm. I go, what do you mean? I go, well, my whole life was this science guy in the head, brain working, heating up, brain. But the moment I understood this fact, our identity is a broadcast that's picked up by these antennas. And I say, now here's the analogy. The body is a television set with a set of antennas tuned to a broadcast. And so right now you're looking at the Bruce Show on this television right here. But the broadcaster, the broadcast is the field. It's a broadcast. It's not this. I go, so what does that mean? I say, well, you're watching a TV. The TV breaks. I say, yeah, TV's dead. That's gone. The question is the broadcast still there? Mm-hmm. Yes, of course the broadcast is still there. Get another TV and tune it in. You're back on. Reincarnation is a consequence of our body is the television set. Our identity is the broadcast that's picked up by the called self-receptors. That if the body dies, the broadcast is still there. And if an embryo shows up with the same set of antennas, you're back in a different TV. I go, so what does that mean? I say, well, does it make a difference if male or female? I go, nope, that's the TV set. Does it make a difference if it's white, brown, black, red, yellow? I go, no, that's the TV set. We are not the TVs. We are the energy fields. Mm-hmm. And it's all consciousness. And everything you've been talking about on your program, Aubrey, is scientifically founded on this understanding of the quantum physics of sending the signals to the biological cells, and the cells, or their DNA is adjusted by what? The signals from your mind. I go, so what is the most important thing for our audience at this moment? all of you have been programmed to believe that genes turn on and off and control your life. I go, well, as far as you know, did you pick the genes you came with? I go, oh, no, I don't know. You don't like the characteristics? Can you change the genes? I go, no, I can't do that either. And then, of course, genes turn on and off by themselves. We have programmed the entire damn population to believe they're victims of their heredity. Something running in their family is genetic, like cancer. And I go, hello, people out there in the world. Let me give you a scientific fact. This is a scientific fact. There's no gene that causes cancer. There's no gene. You get the gene, you have cancer. Genes are correlated with cancer. The fact that what causes cancer is disharmony in the system.
This is one of the things. This is one of the things that I find very challenging. Is I've had, you know, friends who have taken it upon themselves to get a preventative prophylactic mastectomy because of a certain gene expression or a certain allele combination, and they're like, "Well, I'm at a higher risk for breast cancer, so preventatively, I'm gonna, you know, perform a mastectomy," which the science about whether mastectomies even affect the spread of cancer is also dubious as well. I've, you know, read some different reports and analysis of data from Travis Christofferson. And so that's even dubious in and of itself, let alone what you're saying, which is this idea that it's our consciousness that decides which of these genes expresses. And so it's less about the hardwired genetics, which is unique. We are unique in our DNA sequences, but the field is also part of this stream of consciousness. In the beginning was the word, which is vibration. And then all is mind, the universe is mental, the first principle of the Kybalion, like all of these things start to weave together. And then you start to understand yourself and your role in the cosmos in a wildly different way. And then you look at a procedure like these preventative mastectomies and you go, no, please stop, you know?
Yeah, 50% of the women that have the gene never get the cancer. And that's a very important point because they never talk about that part. They say, well, how come they have the gene? They didn't get the cancer. And the answer is because they're not living a stressed life. Stress, and this is a scientific reality, stress is responsible for over 90% of the health crisis on this planet. Genes are responsible for less than 1% of the disease on this planet. Less than 1% is connected to genetics. A very important fact where it's like, okay, this is how it works. Children, when adopted into a family where there's cancer running in that family, the adopted child will get the same family cancer. But the point, the adopted child has totally different genetics. What was the point? It was being adopted into a family where the programming of that child is what caused the cancer. There were no genes that were correlated between the family and the adopted child. And over 90% of cancer has no genetic linkage. Just all of a sudden, spontaneous cancer. It's like, no, it didn't come from genes. It came from disharmony. This is the science that I saw back in 1967 when I recognized that I can control the fate of genetically identical cells, not by changing the genes, but by changing the environment that the cells were in. And all of a sudden I say, but what's the difference? I say, what we just said a moment ago is you've all been programmed public, have been programmed to believe that genes control the character of your life and you have no control, that you're a victim of your heredity. The new science says, absolutely not. It's consciousness who releases the chemistry to the environment that controls the genes. And you can change your consciousness, and you can change your environment. And all of a sudden I say, oh my God, we were programmed to be victims. It turns out we are masters of our genetic activity. And this is the new science called epigenetics, epi above, epigenetics, control above the genes, consciousness.
Yeah, this is also one of the early philosophies that I was really drawn to, and it's the Toltec philosophy, and they divide the population into two different types of people. There's the Tonals, who are, like you said, who are just moving about as victims of their circumstances, victims of their genes, allowing life to paint life's picture upon their own canvas or to play and program their own shows on their TV. And then there's the Nagwals, who are the artists of their own life. They paint their own masterpiece. And the idea is that through their cultivation of what they call intent, they're able to not only change their own life and their own biology, but their perception of all of life. And as they change their perception of life, life starts to change around them as well. Because as you said, we're connected to the field. So it's not just our field that changes. It's the field that we influence around us that changes.
Well, this is the part, because one of the things is that there's the hard part was, how did my thinking affect all this out here? And it's very interesting, because we've all learned from experience that when you put wires on a person's head, it's called electroencephalograph, EEG, and you could read brain function inside your head. It's like, yeah, it's all working inside my head. And now there's another way to read brain function. It's called MEG, not electrical, but magnetic, okay? The probe is out here, and the relevance is profound. What does it mean? It says, I'm reading your brain function out here. What does it mean? Your thoughts are going out into the field. They're broadcasting energy, and the energy of your thoughts entangles with the energy of the world around you, and in a major sense, determines and shapes the painting that you just mentioned of ourselves, of who we are. And when people awake to this, that's when they come, I can't remember the name of that other population that you just mentioned.
Nagwals.
But the moment you're awake, all of a sudden it's, well, wait a minute, I can change the program. I go, ah, that's the game. That's the winner. And you go, program? So let me just introduce this, because it's profoundly important. The brain is a computer. It's not like a computer. It is the most fabulous computer on planet Earth, is the human brain. And I go, so what? I go, but it functions in the same way that the laptop or desktop computer that you have works in the same way. And I go, what is it? I say, well, let's go back. In the old days, you buy a computer and you take it home and you plug it in and you start it and the screen boots up. And I say, okay, you got a brand new computer. Let's do something. And you go, well, I can't. I said, what do you mean? You got a brand new computer. He said, first, I have to put programs in the computer. Then I can access the computer. I go, this is exactly true for the human brain. I go, what? It's in the last trimester of pregnancy. 3 months before you're born, the screen lights up. Boom. You're on. But yeah, but you got no programs. I go, well, where do you get the programs from? You read the environment. You watch the environment. And especially right after birth, the most important thing is this. A child's brain for 7 years is in a state of hypnosis. I go, why? Because let me ask a question. How many rules does it take to be a functional member of a family? How many rules does it take to be a functional member of that community? I go, thousands of rules. I say, you're going to take an infant, put him in school, give him a book and say, read these rules so you can be a member of a family? It's like, infant can't do that. Nature created the first 7 years of that child's life in a state of brain function called theta, which is hypnosis. I go, what's the point? Well, how do you learn the rules? You watch. You watch your parents and you download their behavior. You watch your siblings. You download their behavior. You watch the community and download their behavior. So I say, what's in your subconscious mind? Programs. Yeah. Where'd you get them from? Watching other people. So I said, do those programs support your wishes and desires? And I go, rarely do they do that. But your programs, you needed to get it into the computer. By age 7, you've downloaded the functional programs of how to, you know, be a citizen here, okay? And then what? Then you become conscious at age 7. And that's when you can type on the keyboard and put your information into the computer. And all of a sudden, I said, well, that's because you are a creator. Your thoughts are going to put the information in, and your brain is going to use the computation of that to manifest a life that matches the thought. And I go, whoa, oh my God. I say, so I'm a creator. I go, yes, you are. But now, okay, the monkey wrench, let me just add this, Aubrey, because this really feeds into everything you talk about. The monkey wrench is this. The conscious mind is the latest evolution of the brain, right behind your forehead. It's the one connected to your personal identity, your spirituality. No two people share that. That's the one with the self receptors, okay? The subconscious mind, the bigger part of the brain, was there before consciousness. Subconscious, meaning below consciousness. It operates without you even seeing it. It's like the computer doing stuff in the background where you're working on something, is doing something in the background. The subconscious is not creative. The conscious is creative. The subconscious is habitual, programmed. And that program runs. I said, when does it run? And I say, well, there's background stuff. Look, your body temperature is maintaining itself. Your physiology is running. Your kidneys are going. You don't have to sit here and think about that. But it also controls behavior. I say, so wait a minute. When does it control behavior? This, finally, Lipton gets to the point. This is the point. The conscious mind, which is creative, has the wishes and desires. You ask anybody, what do you want? The answer comes from the creative conscious mind, okay? The conscious mind can do two things, and this is where the problem, boom, the whole problem of the planet right now. I say, what is it? The conscious mind can look out the eyes, like imagine your body is a vehicle and you're looking out the windshield, and the conscious mind is driving, and the conscious mind is taking you to where? Wherever you want to go, it's wishes and desires. I go, great. But then I say, what else can the conscious mind do? And this is the problem. I say, what is it? It can think. I go, where's the problem? Thinking is not looking out. Thinking is looking in. So the moment you are thinking, your conscious mind is not paying attention to the outer world. The moment you are thinking, you're inside and say, yeah, but what if you're driving the car and you start thinking? I go, this is the cool part. This is when you start thinking, the subconscious is autopilot. You train to drive the car, so the subconscious got a program to drive the car, play a music instrument, ride a bike, walk down the street, do your job. Habits become programs. You don't have to think about them. So I go, so what's the point? How much time does the average person spend thinking? 95% of the day. I go, but what does that translate to? 5% of the day you're paying attention to the world and creating by looking out your windshield where I want to go and what I want. This is what my life, I want that 5%. 95% of the day when your conscious mind is thinking, subconscious programs are autopilot. They step in, take over. I go, so you don't see them. What do you mean I don't see these behaviors? Because you're not paying attention. You're looking inside. So whatever behavior your program is, you are playing it and you're the only one who can't see the damn program. Everybody else does. So the story I've told for 40 years is, you know, you have a friend. You know your friend's behavior pretty well. You happen to know your friend's parent. And one day you see your friend has the same behavior as the parent. So you got to tell your friend, hey, Bill, you're just like your dad. Back away from Bill. And you know this. I say, what do you mean? I know what Bill's going to say. I know it, and you know it. What's he going to say? How can you compare me to my dad? I'm nothing like my dad. And everyone laughs because they have the experience. And I go, the story is that. I say, what is it? Everybody else can see the programs that Bill is playing, and those programs didn't come from him. They came from other people. And Bill's the only one who can't see it. And then he understands, why is my life not working so well? And the answer is because you've been broadcasting a behavior that returns to you crap because it's not behavior you want, but you don't see it. And then I give you the final chance to give my brother Aubrey the shot here to talk about it. My final statement, right, is we are all Bill. Every one of us, every day, 95% of our life, invisible to us, is coming straight out of the subconscious programming that you downloaded from other people. And that's why, hey, he's just like his family. He's just like his dad. It's running in the family. I go, yeah, why? Programs are downloaded and running in the family. Disease, cardiovascular disease, it's not due to genetics. It's bad programming. Disharmony. Diabetes has nothing to do with genetics and everything to do with life programming, all these issues. And that's why thank you, Aubrey, for letting me talk to the people that you talk to, telling the same story, but I just want to put this time.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. And I think really what you're trying to say is that by tapping more into the conscious mind, which is the state of presence, and also a certain level of interoception where you're actually, when you're peering in, you're not just thinking and ruminating on the same programs, but you can actually be a conscious creator and start to alter and adjust the programs in your subconscious mind, like moving, using the conscious mind to alter your subconscious program so that the hardware that you're running by the new software that you're downloading by these beliefs can start to change the full stack.
Yeah, listen, I was programmed like all of us by watching my parents. My father and mother had a dysfunctional relationship. And I say, then what did I learn about relationships that I downloaded into my subconscious program is I watched my father be dysfunctional. And I made a program of what? Dysfunctional relationship. It was nearly 50 years before I could find a relationship that worked because I kept pushing my, being Bill, playing my father's program and partners, potential partners go, nah, I don't want to be part of that. And then, you know, once I started to catch on, it's like, oh my God, I'm running a program that's it's sabotaging everything. And I rewrote that program. And with the help of my partner, Margaret, we've been together 28 years. A guy who couldn't get a damn relationship off the ground for 50 years ends up 28 years of living a honeymoon on planet Earth every day for 28 years. Why? The programmings that took me out of harmony and balance, as you said, rewritten, putting in programs of positive empowerment. And as a result, I live in this world and I'm not affected by all the crazies. I'm that second group of whoever, the Nanaquakis or whatever you call
them. Well, it seems like, you know, unfortunately, we're in a culture because, yes, the programming comes from our parents, but it also comes from the culture. And this was also part of the Toltec belief. They called it the mitote, which is the marketplace of ideas and beliefs, which we get in school, we get from news, we get from our social groups, we get from social media. So that's continually programming this. So we have to not only rewrite the programs of our initial nuclear family, but we have to be mindful of these programs that are being run by the culture. And what it seems like is that there's forces out there that want us purely to be subconscious agents. They want to put us in a Skinner's box and manipulate our behavior exactly as they want. And Skinner's box was, of course, famous where they had a mouse and they could reward the mouse with certain little bits of cheese and punish the mouse with electric shocks or whatever. And they could get the mouse to do exactly what the fuck they want. And of course, all of the technocracy, all of the different big pharma, everything wants us to be inside Skinner's box to manipulate our behavior so they can predict and monetize our attention, our health, every aspect of our life in a way that they can extract the greatest amount of profit and the maximum amount of control. And this is what we're up against.
100%. This is exactly what we're up against. But add one new factor to that story, and that is science has recognized, and this is a fact, and I say, find it in the paper, that we are facing, and NASA scientists actually had a great article saying that we are facing an irreversible collapse of civilization within the next 20 years. And I go, and science has recognized this for a longer time. I even wrote a book on spontaneous evolution showing the fact that we are destroying the environment in which we live, fact of science, to support today's world just the way it is. Let's say we want to keep everything the way it is today. It takes 1.6 planet Earth to provide the resources for today's civilization. Clearly, there is no extra 0.6 planet Earth, and in the process of extracting so much from the planet and destroying, polluting the air, the water, the soil, polluting and destroying, the extinction is looming, and it's less than 2 decades. And you go, what do you mean? I say, we cannot sustain this. This is impossible. We're borrowing into the future so much that we have destroyed the present. And the fact is, we are facing an evolutionary upheaval. The simple fact was, and NASA actually said the two facts that are behind this. Number one is the loss of resources on the planet. Number two, that the money is now concentrated in the hands of 1% of the population and the rest of us are slaves to support that 1% of the population, as you talked about, by programming. And they know that it's coming to an end. I said, so what are they going to do? I say, if it comes to an end, there's going to be chaos. Go to the ATM machine. Not working anymore. You know, what are you going to do? There's no food in the market. So what do you do in a state of chaos? You disempower the people. So how do you do that? We only have power as simple individual humans. We only have power in community. If you're not in a community, there's no power at all. You got nothing going. And I go, nobody paid attention to that COVID. I was going to say shit, but I can't say that. I say crap. That COVID crap. Because the idea was it wasn't lethal as much as they say it was. What it did show was that people who were not in health and way off, like 70% of the people in the hospital were super obese. Another 70-some percent of them were diabetic type 2, and another large percent were cardiovascular patients before the damn virus showed up. The virus is like the wolf. It doesn't take the strong out of the herd. It takes the weak out of the herd. So that's why the nursing homes and those people, they were affected. Everybody, yeah, focus on that. And the tombstones, blah, blah, scare you, okay? What you didn't notice was the entire world, with the exception of Sweden, there was no more community. Put your mask on, separate, don't talk to each other, don't congregate together. And I said, what happened? The entire world of individuals, there was no community. And a handful of people ran the entire globe and what we should do and how we should do it. And nobody paid attention to the fact is you saw the first step of massive disempowerment. Nobody had power except for those people at the top that said, we know and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Game.
So when you look at that, I mean, is this some latent programming that they've received, this empirical programming data that's gone into their own subconscious based out of the own fear of the separate self, the denial of the continuity of consciousness, some way that they've downloaded a program, what Paul Levy in the Native American traditions would call Wetiko or the mind virus, this aspect, is it from that or are they consciously creating anti-life, thanatos, and in kind of almost incarnating that energy consciously, or some combination of the above? I mean, what is going on here? Why are these forces doing this?
Well, it's a combination of both, the way I would look at it, okay? But I also give you this. Culture is driven by a set of beliefs. And when those beliefs change, the culture changes, okay? And I say, what are these beliefs? And I say, there are three fundamental questions that have been asked and answered for 10,000 years with answers changing over the time. And they're called the perennial questions. I say, well, what are they? And the question is, how did we get here? Why are we here? And the third one is, well, now that you're here, how do you make the best of it?
Mm-hmm.
And the answers for each civilization that has preceded us had a different answer. When the answers change, the civilization changes. It happened every time. And the latest civilization is based on science. How do we get here? Accidents of genetic mutations. Why are we here? It's an accident. There is no reason. What do? Darwinian theory. Survival of the fittest in the struggle for life. My father learned it and he never even went to school. It's a cultural foundational belief that this is how we operate. I win, you lose. Sorry, that was the rules of the game, according to Darwin. And I go, Darwin's theory is completely wrong. And not only is it wrong, it is one of the most destructive cultural beliefs that has been introduced to civilization that allows people to accept something like, oh, a million Africans died of starvation. We're throwing away food. And it's like, oh, that's okay. That's their plight. Darwinian theory. They're the losers. I'm the winner. Who cares? That's 1%. And they're the ones that don't give a damn about anything, but they know it's coming to an end. What do they want? Hold the control. And the control is, you brought it up, it's media and culture and programming and all that. And it's like, how long will it last? I go, not too long. You know, we talk about climate change, and of course everybody wants to be polarized. Oh, it's natural. No, humans made it. And I go, and almost all discussions like that, it's not the poles, it's the combination of the poles. Yes. Climate change is a periodic process that happens on the planet. You can go back in history and see it. Human contribution, we're making it worse. We're exacerbating the situation, okay? So we are, in a sense, destroying the planet that provides for our existence.
And, yeah, and it seems and like we need to get, you know, one of the things that makes me optimistic about this, because this could be a very kind of pessimistic view of where we're going. One of the things that makes me optimistic is this new psychedelic renaissance, because one of the things that I've found in the psychedelic renaissance is it reconnects you to the field. You no longer see yourself as a separate self agent, a skin encapsulated ego playing a game of Darwinian win-lose metrics en masse. You realize that, no, I'm part of an ecosystem, and this ecosystem needs to survive for me to survive. It's something that's innate within an animal, where animals, they don't kill more other animals than they need to eat. They are competing. Of course they're competing. So we're going to be competing, but we're competing in the finite games that are nested within the infinite game. And the infinite game is the field of the continuity of our lives and the extension of the infinite game of life on planet Earth. And when people are disconnected from that field understanding and disconnected from the ecosystem, that's where they're able to act in these wildly sociopathic, narcissistic ways that are creating the crises that we're facing.
100%. And that if you keep, look, knowledge is power. And when I give my lecture, I say, let me say the same thing, but in a different context. I say, a lack of knowledge is a lack of power. What you don't know disempowers you. And the idea, for example, that the public has been programmed that you're victims of genetics. And I say, well, so what does that mean? That makes you powerless, because it comes to health. And all of a sudden you say, well, I can't do anything about it. My genes are doing this. And then you say, who can do something? And then you find a rescuer, and that rescuer will charge you to take care of that belief system that you bought into. So as long as you believe you're a victim, you will pay whatever money it costs to get out of being that victim, and no matter how much. I mean, it was always amazing to me that my brother had Hep C, and then this pill comes out, and he goes, oh my God, I can cure Hep C. I go, yeah. It's like, well, what is it? I said, it's this pill. I say, it only costs $1,000 a pill. Yeah. How many do you need? 100 pills. I say, holy crap, $100,000. You know, we have the cure. Why am I charging $100,000? Because humanity doesn't exist. Darwinian theory exists. Darwinian theory says, if I can get it from you, I'm going to get it from you. And you scare people. In my recent lectures, I've gotten a little into this effort of talking about, I call it the power monger's credo. Those that seek power, here's how you do it. You give them the poison for free, and then you charge them for the antidote. Mm. I go, that's the game from history on to the current moment. The church gave people hell, which they actually took from Greek mythology, and they gave it to him. And then when Dante put in pictures, and everybody goes, oh my God, there's hell. And then I say, and then what do they do? They say, well, for 10% of your salary, called tithing, we'll help you not go there. Well, they created the damn problem. Then they sold them the resolution. And I go, same thing with COVID. You're all going to die, but we have free vaccine. Free vaccine, you lying bastards. There was no ever such thing as Pfizer gave you the vaccine. Congratulations. Thank you, Pfizer. It was $1 billion of our own money. And then they say free. It's like they wanted you to have it so bad, because that's disempowerment. and the idea is this is part of a game. Same game from history through. First scare the hell out of you, and then tell you how you can avoid the problem.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I thought was unbearably tragic in this whole, you know, pandemic scenario was not only was the money that being siphoned to Pfizer, right? So Pfizer gets some money and then Pfizer's able to advertise on media channels and Pfizer's able to support political campaigns and everybody's getting a little bit of, let's say, $100 billion. All right, let's say that that was the purse. That was the grand prize that they were going for. But in the meantime, in order to increase the profits, they locked down the entire United States economy and all of the small businesses and kind of break up communities, all of the psychological damage, the different imprinting and traumas on children that who knows the downstream effects that'll be. So there's that whole thing. But then in the process, we gave away trillions of dollars to make up for the fact that we locked down the economy. And then you look at reports from, like, you know, different agencies like the World Food Bank and different agencies, and it would be about, I don't know, $120 billion to provide clean water to every person on the planet. It would be maybe $400 billion to wipe out, you know, starvation and famine on the planet. So for a fraction of what we spent to lock down the economy to increase the profits of these pharmaceutical companies and then the other profits for media and politicians or whatever, which was a very small purse, we created this massive loss of resources that could have actually been utilized to make a more beautiful world. And it was just like, this is fucking insane. We're damaging everything for just the smallest little purse prize of money to a small group of elite individuals. And it's just, it's absolutely unacceptable.
How many billionaires came out of the COVID system? I forgot it was 100 so billionaires that pocketed most of the money, aware of the manipulation they were playing with us at this point. And all you have to do is just scare the people. The moment they're afraid, they give up. That's just nature. If you feel you're the victim, you've got to find somebody with the club who's going to hit that person, and then you will have allegiance to whatever the hell they're saying. And you've lost all power in this situation. Humans are so powerful as individual creators. They're so powerful, but you have to have knowledge. And if you withhold that knowledge, then, of course, the people have no power to use that. And for me, it's like exciting because, well, of course, I wrote all about this stuff about consciousness and empowerment and even how I've overcome that bad programming where I end up with, the honeymoon effect, 28 years of every day waking up going, hey, this is great. In a world that all around me is falling apart, I'm in the middle going, yeah, it's the eye of the hurricane. That's where the intelligence is. Get out of the wind, go into the eye. Why? It's pretty calm and peaceful in the eye of the hurricane.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, so what you're saying too, is that one of the ways that we get manipulated and disempowered is because people leverage our own fears. And one of these fears is the materialist reductionist belief about death. You die and then you're dead. There's no continuity of consciousness, right? This is what universally scientific materialism is telling us in our cultural story. Well, we just know this is not true. The work done at a University of Virginia on people remembering their past lives has absolutely, in my opinion, conclusively shown that reincarnation is a reality. And so one of these primary fears is the fear of death, because we believe that we're actually not going anywhere. Or some of us believe that we're going to some lofty heaven with harps and swans and whatever, if we're a good person. There's a variety of different beliefs, but it seems like this primary fear, the fear of death, is one of the fears that has to be addressed first. And then, of course, the other one would be the fear of pain, which this is where this big energy into, like, initiatic practices, like, I'm going to be in a sweat lodge tonight, you know, where I'll be in the Anipi and it'll be 3.5 hours in the dark and the sweat. So you get beyond this fear of pain, whether it's through the cold or through the heat, these intentional hormetic stressors or a hard workout or an ultra marathon or whatever. So you transcend your fear of pain and then you transcend your fear of death, and all of a sudden you're radically empowered and far less susceptible to be manipulated because of the fears that you hold within your own body, mind, heart, psyche.
Well, this, I'm glad you're doing that, Sweat. I, for the last number of years, I'm involved with a Cree tribe in Alberta, and we do. I bring, you know, I go to the Sundance, okay, mm-hmm. and I bring people from outside, so they can connect with Indigenous people and work with them and put a Sundance on. They're not observers of a Sundance; they're participants, including the Sweat Lodges, and all that. And how radically it changes these people's lives, how they come in with whatever life problems they had. And after spending almost a week with a native tribe in the wilderness, they go home completely different, healed. Many of them come with some illness and then go home completely healed because, as I said, 90% of the illness has nothing to do with the physical body anyway. It has to do with all this. And working with native indigenous people, they were the ones that we need to emulate because they're the first and only ones that recognize spirit and matter are one and the same thing. Mm. So when you cut a tree down, you don't just cut a tree down. You pray to the spirit of the tree. And or you kill a deer, or you pray to the spirit before you get into dealing with them. They were the first, and they were the ones that also recognized we lived in a garden, and we have to take care of it. And all of a sudden, mm-hmm. he said, well, you want this world to come back into order? Well, then pretty damn much go back to the indigenous mindset and start to live because they lived in community, and they lived in harmony. And this is absolutely missing in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, and another one of the tragedies is the people who held these belief systems when empire came in with their superior technology and their weapons of war, and they seemingly intentionally looked to wipe out these populations, cultures, you know, heretical lines, whether it was the First Nations people where the conquistadors came in or empire came in whatever forces, our own nation participated in such atrocities. But then there was also, you know, the witch hunts. What were the witch hunts? Well, these were, you know, druidic people or people who remembered the lineage and the heritage lines of working with energy and magic and medicine, in plant medicine in that form in unique ways. And they were, you know, strung up from trees and burnt on stakes and thrown in water. And, you know, like they were destroyed, you know, by the millions across the whole world.
Because they were the ones that preceded religion, especially like in Greece, where you know it was a place where you took this psychedelic Kikula, I think was the name.
Kikion,
and then you get to experience your real spirituality, and then when the church came in, they said, "No, you can't do that anymore because if you do that, then you're not a customer." So they took away the Kikion, and then all of a sudden they gave you this, okay, here's your wine, here's your wafer. And I said, that's not the same, as it was. And that's when the crap fell down on women because they were the keepers of the secrets of making the plant medicine and helping people go through the plant medicine. And and the idea was, if you go through the plant medicine, why would you join the church? And the answer is you wouldn't. So how do you get rid of them? Well, all of a sudden, women are evil. They were the ones that bit the damn apple. And they're the ones ever since are the witches, as you just brought up. Ever since that time, women have been put into a second-class position because they were pretty damn powerful before mm-hmm. the church took over. And then we lost it, and now it's not the same process of eating a wafer or drinking a bit of wine. It's not the same as becoming aware and conscious.
And fortunately, we're seemingly remembering these old lineages and traditions. And this is the beautiful thing about the field and about the collective consciousness or the morphic resonance field, as Rupert Sheldrake calls it, or the Akash, however you want to say it. In some ways, even though some specific information has been lost, it's really remarkable to me to see people literally downloading from the field, you know, their own unique receptors are downloading programs from the field that have been learned and uploaded and also previously downloaded from the field and resurrecting old lineage traditions that were lost. One of my teachers, Don Howard, did that with the Chavin culture and the way that they served two different medicines, Wachuma and Vilka, in different ways. And that lineage was lost and broken. you know, from Peru. There was no traces of that being practiced, but he listened to the plants, went to the old ruins of Chavín, really understood what the signs were and the clues were in the archaeology and the sculptures and the carvings and the art that existed, and downloaded that whole tradition and resurrected it. And I'm seeing this more and more, where even the things that were lost are now being remembered. And hopefully they're being remembered just in the nick of time. So at the 11th hour in the 59th minute, you know, we're going to have enough consciousness to make it through this, you know, next upheaval and existential threat.
Yeah. And the fact that several states have now legalized the psychedelic drugs as a way of, you know, promoting mental health and consciousness is a very positive sign.
A very positive sign.
Because they've taken it away from us. That was when the church came in and said, no, you're not allowed to have that information. Only we have that. You can't have it. Right. But you can pay us and we'll give you some version of it. And it's like, you're right. This is the time. This is coming to the point. That's why I said 20 years is not a long time from now. And the reality is, well, what are you going to do? And I say, well, a lot of people want to go in and fight the system. I go, no. Fighting the system, they're bigger than you are. And if you take your energy and put it against their energy, that creates sparks and fires, and the energy is wasted. And as Buckminster Fuller, I think, was the one that said, go out and build a better damn system, and the people will come out there. And that's why I'm so honored to be on your show, because what you're doing, you're helping seed this new system, because it's more effective than attacking and breaking the other one, because that just cancels your energy. Energy mm-hmm. is life, man. And we put it into stuff that doesn't give us anything back, then you're just throwing away your life. It's a real important part. It's interesting. I started recognizing, I've been living for the last number of years, it's called the Serenity Prayer. I say, what is that? It says, understand the things you can change and work to change those. And understand the things that you can't change and don't participate in those things.
Right.
And all of a sudden you start to realize this is what we have to do, because we're putting so much energy into things we can't change, when you could have used that energy to make a personal change in your life right now. And this is what the whole mission statement is. Are you going to become awake? Not woke. I don't want to use those words. That sucks. But are you going to become conscious of what's really going on here? And the idea is, well, you watching the media, and I go, well, the media is paid for by the 1%. What the hell do you think you're going to get from those people?
Right.
You know?
When you have a friend, and I've had these friends, you have a friend who pretty much generally agrees with you. You know, you go out to lunch, you talk about this stuff, and they're like, they're pretty on board, no main objections to it. Then they get sick, they get cancer, or they get something like that, right? And then a fear program kicks in. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, they're in the cancer industrial complex mechanism all the way. And it's like, it's very difficult to reach them once you actually get afraid. Even people who largely agree with these principles. What is your, you know, how do you respond? Have you experienced this personally, where you had?
I see this all the time. And basically says what? When I'm afraid, I let my subconscious reactions take over. My subconscious reactions have been programmed. So, for example, most people, when they grew up, if they were in a family and they were sick, what did they do? Conventional family? We go to the doctor. Mommy goes, daddy goes, I go, we go to the doctor. And I say, well, what did you learn from a repetitive pattern? And the answer is this. When it comes to health, I'm the doctor knows. And all of a sudden, you will give up your power because you believe you have none, and then buy whatever the hell they're trying to sell you. That's the subconscious program that we got when we were young. Now, it's not in all people. You know, it's interesting because I used to be a professor in a medical school, and then at some point I said, I left at a good school, Stanford. I was doing research there. And then I said, I started teaching in chiropractic college. I go, why? Because they're energy healers. That was from day one. D.D. Palmer, he put his hands on people. He said, vibration, tone, sending information. I go, yes, that's what it's about. Why I brought that up is I work with a group of the chiropractors are in two groups, mechanists who are like medical doctor people and vitalists who are conscious people. And it's interesting because if you observe the families of the vitalist chiropractors, it's like, oh my God, these kids don't get vaccinations. They don't go to doctors and they're healthier and smarter than almost all the other kids I've ever seen. Why? Disconnect from that system, because that system was totally to take advantage of you. And everyone, oh, the medical people, they're here for my health. I go, hell they are. They're here for how much money they can get from you, because it's not the doctor anymore. It's the corporation, you know, Kaiser Permanente. When you go to the doctor, who are you paying? Well, I get the doctor a little bit, but Kaiser Permanente, man, they walked away with this thing. They corporatize healthcare. Healthcare should be free because it's humanitarian. You know, what humans do, help people, not the health industry today, especially. Look, I used to be a professor in a medical school. Let me give you a simple truth. The coursework, you know, the academic material that we offer is actually provided by the pharmaceutical company. Why? Doctors are programmed to give drugs. You come in, before you even come in, they got the prescription pad, they're waiting. Why? The success of the doctor in, let's say, Kaiser Permanente or one of those other corporate things is how fast the patient come in, how fast you can give them a prescription, and then let them out. You know, can you do it in 4 minutes? Yeah, I can do it in 4 minutes. I go, that's why it sucks. And let me give a fact. It's a fact. And it was published first in 2010, by the Journal of the American Medical Association. The journal that represents the medical system recognized and wrote in their own journal, medicine is the third leading cause of death in the United States. This is a fact. This is not, oh, new age hypey monkeys. No, this is a fact. And the research was repeated in 2016 by the British Medical Journal, which was the same conclusion. The first leading cause of death in the U.S. is cardiovascular disease, the second cancer, and the third has a Latin name, iatrogenic illness. Everybody goes, oh, iatrogenic illness. I go, it means an illness as a result of treatment by a medical doctor. And it's like, that is a fact of life, and I'm not making it up, and it's in two different journals of the leading journals. Medicine is the third leading cause of death. If you had any consciousness, wouldn't you stop and go, is there another way to get there without going through that?
Sure. And also to see the correlation between, you know, we've mentioned how church established itself is as the middleman between us and God in order to get us out of hell. And we just basically replaced many of us, our pastors and preachers in the church, with our medical doctors, which also wear white robes in their own unique costumes to signify their priestly class.
Black robes. First it was black robes with the church and white robes with the science.
Well, they had to flip it. They had to show some distinction, but it was the same thing. They're writing all their prescriptions in Latin, and they used to give sermons in Latin, so people didn't even know what the fuck they were saying. So it keeps people ignorant of what the actual process is. So they're writing in Latin. They're making up terms that people don't know. They develop a priestly class. They disempower by removing the knowledge that people have, and then they extract profits as the middlemen between us and our health and our thriving vitality, or us and God. And what we're saying here is the revolution that we're talking about is the democratization of health and the democratization of access to the divine, unmediated access to health and unmediated access to God. And guess what? There's a lot less profit and a lot less control available when it's unmediated and democratized. And so that's what these forces are really looking to do, is to maintain their position as middlemen. And then, of course, the people who are above the middlemen, either the large churches or the large corporations, which then control all the power. I mean, the Catholic Church still is one of the most resource-rich, you know, you could call it a corporation in the whole world. And it doesn't mean that they don't speak some beautiful things into the world and have guided people in beautiful ways. Same with medicine. Medicine, you know, when I got in a car crash And, you know, the jaws of life had to, you know, cut my car open, and I went in and they sewed my nose back on my face, like, and gave me antibiotics. I'm real glad that I was able to go to a hospital. Don't get me wrong, you know, and I've really enjoyed my experience with traditional religious faith. So it's not all bad what we're saying here, but there's also, you have to look at the shadow side as well as the benefit that these things have brought to our culture.
That's right. Look, if there was no benefit side to this, this thing would have collapsed a long time ago. So they offer you some handful of benefit at some cost that is a lot deeper than what you were even thinking, okay? And it's quite unfortunate because doctors seem to get the brunt of the problem when it's like, no, it's the education system and the corporations that determine the academic education system that puts the doctors in a spot where they can't practice. And you know, as I said, there, I think it's about a 4 or 5 minute time limit that in a corporate hospital that a doctor has an opportunity to talk to a patient before giving them the drug. And the idea is, and then the doctors get blamed. I go, man, they're the ones that are between a rock and a hard place because they're not allowed to practice. They're you got to practice within the parameters of what the corporate people determine. When I was young, I'm an old guy, so I can remember a long time ago when we had great health care. But you know what? We didn't have specialists. We had family practitioners. Mm-hmm. I go, what are family practitioners? Well, they worked with everybody in the family. They knew the dynamics. They knew how things were working out and where the issues were in a family. And then all of a sudden, now I'm a specialist. I go, well, I got 10 minutes with you, 5 minutes. What the hell do I know? And the answer is, as long as you give them the drug, that was the destination in the corporate control. Give them the drug before they leave that room.
Well, again, it's another abject and universal denial of the field. They're not allowing us to, not allowing people to recognize all these specialists are just focusing on a symptom. All these drugs are just focusing on a symptom in the denial of the complexity of the organism, the field of consciousness generated from our entire body and the way that the field dynamics play with the larger cultural dynamics and the constructs that we're in. It's just denial of the field and the focus on the specific, this Cartesian split of mind and body and spirit, and everything is divided, and then symptom from illness, everything is being divided further and further within the body and treated separately. Same in culture. We're dividing our culture further and further and further based upon our identity politics and whatever else, so that we're isolating each other more and more as we're isolating our body more and more. Like, as above, so below. These same principles, if when you look at the meta principle of this divide, 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 or bring into greater wholeness, greater wholeness, greater wholeness, you know, these are the two different forces that are playing on all levels in this, you know, kind of cosmic game, cosmic with a K.
Right. But then, as you brought it up, there's two populations, ones that are going to just sit there and say, what do you want me to do? And the other group is going to say, wait a minute, what's this all about? Let me check into it. And then I have a decision to make, not you make the decision. That's a split that we're working on right now. And when you put fear into the system, and God, this whole world is based on fear. There's not enough money. You're not going to be able to get health care. You won't be able to buy food. The job only gives you, what, $12 an hour, and you need to take 3 jobs to get through the week on this kind of stuff. It's like we have been pushing people against the wall. Now, it's interesting. If you come into a room at night and you open the door and you turn on the light and there's a rat in the room, the first move of that rat is to get the hell out of the room as fast as it can. That's all it wants to do is get out. But if you get the rat in the corner and you're between it and the exit, there's a second strategy that plays right now, and that is this. The rat will jump in your face. It will just go for and go for your face, okay? I bring this up because we're being pushed into that corner. And very interesting, the Israeli-Palestinian thing is the same thing. Years and years and years of pushing the Palestinians against that little narrow strip of land before you push them into the ocean and pressuring them and locking them in that corner. No, kidding. I mean, they're going to jump in your face. And they did finally, and then everybody gets mad at them for jumping in the face, and nobody says, You've been pushing them to the edge of existence, and you expect them to just sit there? I go, until that critical point. And we're facing that in our own world right now, as you brought up, and it's really important, is like, can we continue doing this process? And the answer is, nope, it's not sustainable, can't happen. That's not a suggested answer. That is an indelible, actual, real answer. You cannot do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I say, then what? I say, well, this is why it's falling apart, which I encourage, because it's the system that we have that's causing the problem. But I'm also encouraging to say, don't fight the system, but go out and create this other community. And it's this community which will work together in harmony that will manifest the future world. It's all based on community, not separation, not survival of the fittest. Nope. It's based on harmony and community. And yeah. It goes back to the indigenous processes that you have brought up, because that's the way they lived.
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that if you're pushed into the corner that that you're excused for any actions that are taking place here, right?
Oh, like, no.
There's no place to excuse the atrocities that occurred on that date when those that were pushed in the corner lashed out in such aggressive ways, right? We can't use that justification to say, I'm pushed in the corner, so I'm gonna go shoot up the hospital because I was pushed in the corner and that's my response to it, right? So it's a balance of both. It's recognizing systemic pressure and then taking ownership and responsibility that we can make better choices, because that choice ultimately didn't yield any result other than more conflict that happened, right? So it's this interesting balance that we're in, where yes, we're being pushed in the corner, and yes, we also have to resist this kind of animalistic lizard brain instinct to just go for the face of those oppressors, right? We have to say, like, all right, everybody, we're all in this together. We have to actually build that community, like you said.
Yeah. Well, I write a monthly newsletter, and I put in that newsletter, there's not one side that's right. They're both sides are part of this participation. You can't just say, like in marital disputes, he's the one that did it. No, she's the one that did it. It's like, no, you both were there, folks. You both did it. Mm-hmm. And you got to deal with it at this level. And it's interesting because as soon as I tried to say both were wrong, you should see in some of the emails I got back, it was like, I burned your book. you know, it's like, how could you do this? And I go, hey. Until we resolve it. Very interesting. The Arab Spring started in Tunisia. And I go, so what? I say, they threw out the dictator. There was a whole reason for the guy burning himself, and then that precipitated a revolution, and they threw out the dictator. And then now they want to bring the country back together. And guess what? It was all males that were in their parliament. And the first thing that happened was two sides started fighting each other. And for a whole year, no progress was made because both sides fighting this and this and this. The next year, they elected women. And women became part of the parliament. And guess what they did? They said, look, instead of arguing over which side is right in this, why don't we start with something we all agree on and start to fix from the point of we all agree on something like education, healthcare, and all that. And the result of that is they wrote the most powerful constitution of any country that exists on this planet today, and they got the Nobel Peace Prize. Their parliament got the Nobel Peace Prize for what? Stop supporting the conflict and start promoting the harmony. That was what the game was. And they did it so successfully, they created the best constitution on the planet from that.
Yeah, I mean, we have to move through this period of exacerbated polarization, and we have to, yes, of course, still stand up for what you believe, allow yourself to have your voices, but always set a seat at the table for the opposition, a place where you could share a cup of tea and see the humanness and understand that they are you living a different life, with 95% of themselves having been programmed to believe what they think they're choosing to believe, but they're not even choosing to believe it anyways. So we're all connected to each other way more than we're separated, and say, you know, like, all right, let's have a cup of tea together. Let's talk about this together. Let's recognize our commonalities and how much more we're alike one another than we are different, rather than exacerbating and focusing in this kind of ruminating and really expanding our separation and our differences. Let's actually remember how similar we are and how we all share the same home. We're all different rooms in the same palace, in the same garden, which is the garden of earth and the palace of our home. And we have to remember that we're all in the same house. You know, we might be in different rooms, but we're in the same house.
I was fortunate enough to, we put a program on in Tel Aviv, and it was, we had bussed in over 300 Palestinians from the West Bank that never were even in Israel before. And we bussed them in. We had this big theater with 1,500 people or so. And of course, when it first started, the Israelis sat over here, the Palestinians sat over here, no talking to each other, right? I go into the program that a little bit we mentioned earlier about how we are programmed and that this program is passed generation to generation. It's not the genes, it's the program that are being passed. And so I'm giving them the science of this epigenetics and mind and all that stuff. And then I said, and now here's the problem. And I'll never forget, it was a black screen with just in white letters, the problem. And when I pushed the advance, two pictures came up side by side. One was Israeli children playing with machine guns. The other was Palestinian kids dressed up in military uniform carrying wooden guns. I said, look what you're programming. Mm-hmm. These kids hate each other. They don't even know each other. Mm-hmm. You've been programming this, and it's been passed from generation to generation to generation. They hate each other, and they don't even know each other. And I let that sink in, and for the moment, I'll never forget it. It was like a vacuum. There was no sound in the room. The air was sucked out of the room. There was no noise because they stopped for one moment, and they both looked at the pictures and went, holy crap. Mm. And then I showed the next slide. I said, the solution. And the next slide was a Palestinian and Israeli boy playing outside, and the other one was a Palestinian girl and Israeli girl walking arm in arm down the street. And I go, these kids will never fight each other. Mm-hmm. You know, they know each other. They don't, kids don't fight. You created this. And it was interesting because the demeanor of the room changed. And yeah, by the end, we had a big thing out in the lobby with food and drinks, and they were whirling dervishes, and there was music, and people started dancing. And lo and behold, Palestinians and Israelis were hanging out together in a social experience, sharing food and music together. But it was that, I can remember that moment where they looked at the picture and it's, oh, what are we doing? It's like, yeah, what are you doing? And it was just a powerful experience. But the part was to see them at the end where they wouldn't mix when they came in. They all became one social community at the very end and talked to each other. It was amazing.
It reminds me of that, you know, famous Christmas Day soccer match that developed in I think it was World War I, where they just decided on Christmas Day, the Axis and the Allies, somebody just rolled out a soccer ball. They've been in the most brutal, atrocious warfare against each other. But these are all, you know, 17 to 22 year old kids for the most part. And they just rolled out a soccer ball and just decided to play a soccer match. And in that, for that one moment, they weren't enemies who are trying desperately to kill each other. They just recognize, like, oh, we're young men and we both share this commonality of our desire to play. And, you know, they play that match. And I can only imagine how much more difficult it was after that to pick up your guns and your mustard gas or whatever else and just go back to killing this person who you just saw, you know, dribble down the side and hit a great curling strike towards the goal and just realize, like, what the fuck are we doing? You know, like,
I saw that movie. That's a very powerful and true, as you said, very powerful, true story of how all of a sudden Christmas Day, war stopped. let's go out, big people, you know, and it's like, oh my God. And then, as you said, at the end of the day, they back into their camp at some point. But it was a moment of reality that, and this is the evolution. See, a Darwinian evolution is we're going to get more genetics and more control and bullshit like that. No, the evolution is the evolution of community. Because when we recognize all humans are part of the same social structure, which is actually we are cells in the body of an evolving organism called humanity. We are the cells. Humanity doesn't exist at this moment on this planet. The ideas of it and practices of it are apparent, but it's not fully here because humanity means we're all cells in the same body. You don't kill each other. That's autoimmune disease. That's self-destruction. That's not happening in a harmonious human body.
Yeah, and it's the same idea of the war mentality. You know, one of the best books on health that I read was Travis Christofferson wrote a book, Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer. And he goes back to Warburg's theory of how, you know, cancer cells are, they've lost connection with the rest of the body. So they're isolated, separate self cells who are in it for their own benefit. This almost tribalism on the actual cellular level where all they're doing is they're fermenting sugar. They've lost communication and they're going to grow rapidly. And so the idea is because we have this war consciousness, well, it's the war on cancer. Let's war against these cells. And he's saying, this is the exact fucking wrong plan. The plan needs to be, how do you rehabilitate these cells? How do you get them back in coherence and communication with the body? But this whole idea of war, again, we keep showing that these same principles are applying. How do you fix a solution externally with another country? Go to war, kill them, more bombs, more fucking machine guns, more chemical weapons like chemotherapy. How do you deal with cancer? Well, these cells are out of line. Kill them, you know, let's put fucking radiation, let's nuke them with this poison or this poison. It's war.
And like, watch really out for the friendly fire.
Exactly.
When you kill the cancer cells, you are also killing the stem cells that are keeping you alive because it's only based on their ability to divide. And cancer cells divide, stem cells divide. And when you put the chemo into these cells, it doesn't distinguish between the good cells and the cancer cells. It just kills them. I mean, a simple point is this. Killing the cancer cell is like, it's already too, you know, you've already made the cancer cell. The question was, killing the cancer cell didn't stop what caused the cancer cell. So you're not even dealing with the cause of the damn problem. You're dealing with the consequence of the problem, which is not going to resolve it. It doesn't resolve.
Same with war. It's the same fucking thing with war. It's like, is this going to stop? Is this going to create peace? Is all the war in the Middle East, is that going to create? Are we finally going to get to the solution where we've bombed everybody into? No, that's not the way. It's going to be a rehabilitation of the global organism, a new story for a new humanity. And we got to move beyond this war consciousness, both within our bodies and within the body politic of the world at large. Like, these ideologies are faulty. They're not fundamentally going to lead to a solution that's going to work. And that doesn't mean that there isn't specific times where, all right, cut out this tumor, all right, make this one thing, this one aggressive move, which is absolutely necessary. Yes, put this antibiotic on your staph infection. I understand that, you know, this is a bacterial cell as well, but nonetheless, it doesn't belong here. We have to do something about it. I'm not saying no law and order, no police, no military, no allopathic medicine. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying use that as the last resort. That's the last fucking resort that you use when there's literally no other solutions. But we don't use that as the last resort solution. We use that as the first line of defense, which is militarize and go to war. And it's just not going to fucking work. It hasn't worked and it won't work.
Nope. And you're right about it. The idea is, why is it going to be different this time when it's never been different? It's always been the same. I love there's a read this quote. It says, war does not determine who's right. War determines who's left. So and it's this wake-up call. Are we going to respond to it? And so again, I have to say, I really appreciate the opportunity being here with you, yeah. Aubrey, because your community is the people that I really see are the waking up people, the people that are seeing a different answer to the situation and looking for, give me another answer because the other ones don't work anymore, you know? They're cultural creatives, the audience. They're the ones that say, I'm ready. Give me another direction. Let's do it.
Amen.
And so
amen.
I really want to say how much I appreciate and thank you for this opportunity, for letting me talk on your platform.
Well, it's, as I said at the beginning, it's an absolute honor because one of the reasons why I have the consciousness and ideas that I have are people like yourself. You know, your book, Biology of Belief, was foundational in me re-understanding the cultural story that I've been told. So it's been an absolute honor. And just thank you so much for your history of work and the continued work that you'll continue to do, I'm sure, till your last breath, because it's your very nature. To stand and speak the truth from your heart and from your mind.
Thank you so very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We love you, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning into the show, everybody. Bruce's energy is absolutely infectious. I'm feeling fired up and inspired to take authorship of my own life, and I hope all of you guys feel the same. Make sure, if you can, to like the episode, share it with your friends. Let's get this information out as far and wide as we can. We love you guys, and we'll see you next week.